Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, the Metal Gear Solid board game is canceled.
Okay.
Just in case you're still waiting on that pre-order. New releases coming from Wet Ink and their game Never Going Home.
Cool.
And Legend of the Five Rings is ending. The LCG is ending.
Canceled.
Yeah, canceled. Boom, we have the stamp on the screen. Yeah. Right, so let's start with the mess that is the Metal Gear Solid board game. Yeah, so I was getting really suspicious about this because I know those IPs are not easy to handle. Okay. And it seems like every major video game franchise is getting a board game.
What are the other examples? I know of Monster Hunter.
Everything. I mean, Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah.
I've gotten one. I think...
As a non-video gamer, you could tell me anything and I would believe
it. Yeah, yeah. But there's just about every major thing I could think of is like, wow, how is that going to be a board game? How is that going to be a board game? So there's a lot of licensed IPs. Right. And finally, you know, the negative side of this is coming out. So there's... And I'm not sure, I don't think they did it through Kickstarter, but they had some sort of pre-order where they're using BackerKit and also Amazon.
Okay.
And more than 2,000 people pre-ordered this game. And now the publisher has backed out, which means the license is gone. And the original designer still has the rights to the design of the game, but it can't be Metal Gear Solid.
Right,
because,
yeah.
And so now people are all complaining. So Konami is the company, and they've been really... bad with handling their properties. Basically, they're only doing kind of pachinko and slots now with all of their they've kind of backed out of original IPs and games. So this was really disappointing for a lot of people because they're not making any more Metal Gear games. That doesn't exist anymore. Kojima.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Kojima is no longer the original. That designer is no longer at Konami.
Right. Okay. Yep.
They still own that IP. He doesn't own it. So that's why we got Death Stranding instead of that. But anyhow, this game has totally fallen apart. So it was originally announced in December 2018.
Okay. A long time.
Yeah. And it's a $125 game at retail, but people were allowed to pre-order it for $109. So that that got over 2,000 people between BackerKit and Amazon pre-ordering. And there is no game now.
Right, like interesting.
Yeah, so.
Well, I mean, imagining what this game, I didn't look at it wasn't a Kickstarter, didn't look at the page, don't really play that many board games, never played a Metal Gear Solid game in my life, know who it is just through cultural osmosis.
Right, right.
But imagining, or my image of what this game looked like, or would look like, $125 does not sound like an unreasonable price.
Oh yeah, yeah. They did a bunch of original miniature sculpts, so that's it's kind of miniature heavy game.
That's what I figured. On the other hand, I guess if don't know what kind of site or whatever they did it through. If it was a pre-order, then I feel like there's a bit more onus on them to actually deliver,
rather than
Kickstarter, which is creators supposed to make their best faith effort to do it, but it's not a guarantee.
Right.
But then people are totally, I guess, allowed to try and demand their money back.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the case with this other site.
Right. Yeah. So, IDW was the publisher, the original publisher. And I don't think people are going to have problems if they pre-ordered on Amazon because Amazon doesn't bill you until they ship something. Right. But I'm not sure about BackerKit, about how that works. And I think they collect fees right before they ship as well. So everyone's money is just kind of hanging in limbo. Mm. And the original designer is trying to figure out how to work this and says, you know, I'll put up money to buy the rights to the game. He wants to get this released. But so it's been delayed. So the release was supposed to be summer of 2021. And now that the licensing is gone, it's all kind of up in the air.
I wonder what happened. Was there any indication of
there's just a problem with the publisher. Maybe the publisher had financial problems or whatever, and they made the deal with the license. So as soon as they backed out and they said, hey, we can't afford to do this, then that's
license
it.
For the designer is gone, right?
Right, right. Yeah, so the designer didn't directly license it. So that's a big, that's why I always worry when I see these things and how common they're becoming. It gets a lot of people interested, but, you know, you've got a lot more moving parts than if it's a publisher that owns an original IP, the designer works for the studio, or at least they have a good contract with that designer. These things don't fall apart so easily. Right. But, for pre-orders, though, and a lot of... most recently in crowdfunding, they just want recognizable names. They want properties that people will be excited about.
Because business angle, I can't blame them, right?
Right, right. But this is what you get. You know, this is, you know, because you're dealing with, we're dealing with kind of companies that are only thinking about, you know, a bottom line and like, you know, like Konami.
Kind of tend to think that's what companies do. And I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm just kind of like, it's kind of expected.
But you got to think about it. I mean, bottom line, but also reputation. I mean, you blow your credibility, you blow, you know, something like this, and people are like, yeah, I'm not gonna, you know, even be interested if you get this put back together,
right?
About what's going on. So another property that's kind of coming to an end, and licensing is coming to an end, is Legends of the Five Rings, right? So the LCG has been going on for a while. So Fantasy Flight has been publishing the LCG, and we kind of,
since when?
Oh, let me check.
Because I've played a couple games of the Legend of the Five Rings LCG, I think.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Because what happened was when I got into Android Netrunner, Lyle kind of said, okay, well, he would get into Legend of the Five Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of like, okay, we have two games that we kind of alternate playing at lunch.
Ah, I see.
And I was real happy with my purchase of Netrunner. The impression I got from Legend of the Five Rings was not that great, because it took a long time to play. Battles kind of seemed like one side either lost everything or won. And shortly after Lyle got whatever that box set was, they came up with a big errata list where they said, like, a large chunk of the cards in this set cannot be used outside of this set because they're just bonkers broken in the larger meta thing.
Right.
So I came away from that with not a great taste of the L5R mechanics.
Right.
You know, plus it's Japan with the serial numbers filed off and like a dash of Korea and China mixed in there.
Jade Empire or whatever.
Which, you know, I'm kind of over the whole mythical samurai thing, especially put out by a company that's
in Minnesota. So it was 2015. Fall of 2015, Fantasy Flight announced that they had acquired the rights to Legends of the Five Rings. So it already was an established card game. I can't remember who previously published it.
AEG, maybe?
Oh, yeah. I think that's right. And so they don't have the maybe the marketing that Fantasy Flight does, or at least the kind of, they really started to push the living card game model. So previously, was it a collectible card game?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
All I know is that it was a card game that existed.
Right.
And I think by AEG, how it played or what format it was, I couldn't tell you. I imagine it was probably more collectible, because the sense I get is kind of living card games didn't really exist until
they kind of invented,
Fantasy Flight invented them, which is,
And I think I've gotten really negative. Like, we did very early on in the podcast, we talked about the kind of that format, the living card game format, and I've really soured on that since then, because it's got it. There's so many aspects to it, because you get on this kind of grind of buying things. And just like with mobile games that have a social aspect to it, there's like social pressure to kind of keep up with the meta, keep up with the group. So, you know, you get a group of people kind of locked in. And I enjoyed Netrunner so much that that didn't bother me. But any other property, I really got annoyed by. It's like, just, I don't play this enough to, you know, to commit to, you know, $15, $20 or whatever, you know, a month for
play Magic, my friend.
Right. But it just, you know, felt like such a waste, and you just had cards, you know, packs of cards you didn't even open when there weren't games that you're actively playing.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, living card. And then if you're not on the wheel, then to catch up is painful. It's like, okay, well, I got to pay $150 to be where you guys are.
No, I had a similar experience with Netrunner, because we came in kind of late.
Right.
Where I just happened to be going back to the States. And when I was there, picked up like all the expansions to date, which were like the first data pack cycle and one of the like Creation and Control deluxe expansion.
Right.
And then hoped I could buy the couple copies of the base set in other places. And I did that. But it was about like $150, $200. I did not need to spend that.
I could have
just bought a core set and be done with it. But coming from Magic, there was that kind of overwhelming urge and slight social pressure to be current.
Right.
And I think, I don't know if the idea of a living card game was to never have cards rotate out, but you just can't do that.
Right.
If you're constantly releasing cards, even not constantly, like eventually. Things are going to get broken just because of all the interactions you have to go back through.
That's true. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of the, it's, I don't know if it's like power creep, but it's like mechanics creep where like things just become, oh, this is the, boring vanilla way to play. Why don't we, you know, in this expansion, they do this and you can do this. And did you know that you could manipulate credits this way? You know? So that got a little bit, frustrating, and then there's no kind of end point. It's just like this never ending escalation. So that's why I'm thinking about with this game ending. So the five cycles or dynasty packs and clan packs, 7 clan packs, 5 dynasty packs, and 3 premium expansions have been released. And so that's going to be it. But if you've collected everything, if you have everything, is that still a game you can go back to? Or is it just kind of frozen in this moment in history where it's like, oh, this is how you played the game, you know, up until this expansion was released? And I don't know, do we want to do that?
Not knowing how the game works, but like thinking of Netrunner, like up until the rotation started, you played with everything.
Right.
And we never experienced it because get the sense we all liked to experiment with decks and showed up with like a new deck every single time we played.
Right.
So there was never a dominant kind of like deck style in our little meta. That might not be the case for other players. So, I mean, but that's just kind of the nature of a game, I think.
Right.
Where we're playing with this set of whatever, there is going to be better or worse strategies within that set of options. And you either have to adapt to it or find a way around it or play the quote random jank that nobody expects and wins because no one is trying to, you know, do the thing you're doing. And that has to be roughly, because again, I don't know how Legend of the Five Ring card game works.
Yeah, but it's probably very similar. I can't imagine. Seems like all living card games are, they kind of have the same sort of thing, because it's, you know, they're making them for tournament play and they're, you know, they're making it, it's a competitive kind of tournament thing. So that's another kind of way that the living card games seem to be pulled, and the mechanics seem to, so that's why they're releasing, they have to have, you know, banned card lists and things, because once you get people that are going to be really competitive with the game, they're tearing apart the mechanics, and then you see how overpowered or how ridiculous some of the combinations are. And so it's just weird. So because that was the experience with the Warhammer Fantasy game. So that ended, and so those cards were insanely cheap, so I got everything, like everything in a big bulk.
We still haven't played that, have we?
They haven't played that very much, no. But it's not a complete game, because at the end, some of the later factions are just like, whatever. You can't completely, if you play with the factions that were originally included in the core set, it's fine, but you know, they really started to,
if you try and like branch out to stuff, feels really incomplete.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah. If everyone wanted to play a different faction, or you wanted to set things up a certain way, it just doesn't work. So they didn't finish the game. And so living card games kind of feel like that. It's never going to be finished. So when it stops, you just, you know,
it kind of peters out.
Right. You can just kind of throw everything away or play it for nostalgia, you know, occasionally.
I did read, or I scanned the article that you're referencing, and not knowing why the game was ending, suspecting they lost the license, similar to what happened with Netrunner.
Right.
I was unable to tell whether that article put out by FFG was making the best of a bad situation and saying, we reached a logical end point and we're kind of okay to wrap things up here.
Right.
Or if they were, I'm not saying they weren't being sincere, but wondering if they were kind of being sincere and being like, that's kind of all there was.
Right.
You know? I don't know.
It's hard to tell, because they did mention COVID, as being, related. Like this year canceled all the events.
Right.
And I think that especially Fantasy Flight really, you know, puts a lot of pressure or a lot of emphasis on the competitive scenes and them doing these tournaments to keep people interested in, just kind of as a kind of a marketing event and promotion to keep the scene active.
Right. Yeah. You kind of have to.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think that's should make a good game and people will play it, and not like it. I just think that the tournament thing, I mean, it works well for things like Magic, but I don't think, like, just like with esports, it's like everybody's designing a game. It's like, oh yeah, but is this an esport? Because that'll really get the money, you know, that'll really generate money.
I guess I can't blame companies for trying to do that, but I was going to say, I think all of its other problems such as a giant cardboard money sink, aside.
Right.
Well, also, Magic's had a lot of time to develop and was basically the D&D of collectible card games.
Right.
But I will give Magic credit into kind of constantly coming up with, like I've said before, new design space to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I guess, addressing the issue that we're kind of discussing of, you know, not convention, tournament structure.
You're right.
Right? Like, there are now multiple ways to play Magic where cards are going to be better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
So that in an individual set, like, some cards are designed for tournament players, some cards are designed for those combo players, some cards are designed for, like, the casual players, some cards are designed, maybe too many now, for, like, the collectors.
Right, right.
But, I mean, with, like, two-headed giant cube draft, all these other kind of ways to play, you could do it. That does increase the secondary market for those kind of more tournament-y style ones where you're looking at, like, I was talking to some people, that they've spent, like, more than you would on a car for a commander deck because, you know, different cards fluctuate in price. But that aside, maybe other card games, if they survived long enough, could take a page from Magic and right out of the gate try and design a game that is playable multiple ways to avoid the thing that we've been discussing about.
Yeah.
Tournament is going to dominate whatever little meta you have.
Yeah, so... And that was the thing that was attractive, I think, specifically about Netrunner is there was kind of community, and everybody that was attracted to the game liked, you know, like they were nice people to play with. They weren't overly competitive, where they were just, you know, their drive was just to trounce everybody and to tweak mechanics so that nobody would ever, you know, just to be so dominant that it's just like, we're not even having fun doing this. Like, what are we even doing? So,
I wonder if that had anything to do with the representation in Netrunner.
Maybe. Yeah. And I think, just the, because I wouldn't have expected, a cyberpunk game to, like, attract really fun people to play with. I mean, like, so socially,
you'd expect it to track what high tech, low life.
Exactly.
People like you. Oh, I gotta play against this asshole again.
People
God damn
like
it!
Wires dangling out of their off their heads, and
hacking from the bathroom stall. Yeah,
but it is such like a negative. You know, the setting itself is so ugly.
Dystopia. Yeah.
Yeah.
But with a bright, shiny coat of paint on it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So and they even mentioned that the director, lead developer for Legends of the Five Rings said that's the thing that's really going to be difficult is losing that community. So the community they spent so much time building up, and Netrunner went through the same thing. They built this wonderful community, and you know, the game, people were really enjoying the game, and they kept releasing. It just kept going, and now that's just gone. But there are things. So obviously, that community still wants that to exist, because like Project Nisei Netrunner, they're still trying to produce, and you said that actually maybe printing physical cards.
I think they've been printing physical cards for a while, because we had a couple of them, but they were like through drive-through cards they're not printing anything themselves.
Right.
But I think soon Project Nisei is going to release its own kind of like starter box. Because prior to this, it was, you used to play, here are small card packs to keep things kind of current and fresh, but no place for new players to jump on.
Right.
This core set from Nisei is a way to do that. Did you miss it? Okay, here's the Nisei box set. I don't know if something similar could happen with Legend of the Five Rings.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious if
that's not through any positive or negative aspect of Legend of the Five Rings, just are the conditions right for that to happen again? It's kind of all I meant.
Yeah. So Fantasy Flight must still have the license, at least for the RPGs and novels, I think. So I think they're still going to be publishing the RPG up to whatever point.
Available in 5e edition.
Yeah, right.
Actually, it is. I don't know.
But so they're not totally done, and they're encouraging people that like that world to like take a look at the RPG. But yeah, for now, the card community is gone. And unfortunately, it was the same thing that happened, though, where everyone's like, is this game over? Because Netrunner canceled that the big tournament or their big... Their big event. People are like, whoa, that's kind of weird. And they use COVID as the excuse for this year to not have it for the Legends of the Five Rings. And then obviously that meant they were kind of done.
As much as that sucks, and as much as I remember a couple people in the Netrunner community or the big tournament scene wondering, kind of before there was any kind of news, wondering if they would be able to attend or if they should make plans to attend. From a business standpoint, I kind of understand, like, if your game, if you've lost a license or if your game is going to end, is the enthusiasm you generate for a dying or dead game going to be worth the expenditure of running that last tournament?
Oh, yeah.
Possibly not. Yeah. So it's better to just say, sorry.
Oh, yeah, and that weird betrayal, because definitely Fantasy Flight knew what was going on. And so you have all these marketing guys and promotion guys like, hey, are you guys really enjoying? Here's some free promo cards, and it's done. It's like you get home from the tournament, you're like, what? Canceled. So, yeah, it's a shame. But I thought that would be an interesting topic to discuss, because we had that same experience with Fantasy Flight and their losing
abandonment of it's not their fault.
Well, we don't know exactly.
I'm sure. You know what? We don't know, but I am pretty sure it was not their fault.
Right.
Because why would you toss aside that cash cow?
Right.
What's this? It's generating money. We don't want it.
Get it out of here. Right. So if you take a look on the table, so Never Going Home.
Which I've never heard of before.
So. Yeah, so it's a really interesting setting and has some great mechanics in the game. So it's a World War One setting.
That's
But it's kind of, it's a...
dark, bleak, and corrupted?
Yes. Yeah, so the idea of that, the kind of wasteland of the World War One is made demonic. So they have the idea of the veil. So... the veil is just, you know, the world between kind of the demonic or chaos and our realm, and that has broken in the midst of war. But because of the chaos of war,
no one's really
nobody's noticed. So everything just goes to hell. So it's kind of like being able to play as soldiers and have combat, but then also have a magic element. But that magic element is a corrupting, corrupting element.
So you're it's not World War One with spellcasters on each side. It's World War One, and oh look, there's a fucking demon over there.
Right. Yeah. And you're kind of survivors, and you're kind of bands of survivors, and kind of encountering like strange perversions of like, you know, humans being possessed and doing even more bizarre things than happened during wartime.
So the grim dark of the Warhammer fantasy universe just ported to World War One.
Oh, it's
not ported,
it's more corrupt and more survival. Okay. Yeah, because it's like what happened, and you're just trying to figure out, you know. So there's a little more mystery. So it's more maybe Cthulhu than it is, you know, would be demonic Warhammer, but very ugly. Like, you know, a lot of like just very horror, a lot of horrific scenes and things that you have to kind of, as a party, resolve, what are we going to do about this? And
walk away and pretend it didn't happen.
Right.
No, I wonder, and again, I do want to look at these books because the art looks pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like a fan of that kind of, this sounds wrong, like the hand-drawn kind of grungy looking stuff. I like that. I wonder... You play bands of survivors. Mm-hmm. Is there still, I cannot speak English. Is there still some kind of like military structure in place?
Yeah, it's kind of fallen apart, but you can that you can organize your party by that, or if you find a lieutenant or a captain, you know, you can,
promote them.
The party can kind of, you know, that ends up being the leader ends up being, and you do. There's still like command orders and things, like there's missions that you can be sent on, but they don't know what's going on. Right. So it's a lot more mystery, and you're investigating as well as like, you know, fighting what you find. But the artist for the game is Charles Ferguson Avery, and he's done his own fantasy settings as well. He's got a couple of really great books of like monsters and adventures for, I think it's kind of system agnostic.
Okay, cool.
But really great stuff. But I was really attracted. That was the first thing that attracted me, is the art of the game. Because it's not, you know, everything black background and everything, you know, grungy and blood splattered. It's got a really nice, like, kind of washed out, you know, faded photograph look to his color scheme. But it's also very bizarre, you know, because the magic itself is handled differently. Like you're actually tattooing yourself with these like these marks of chaos or corruption.
Hunters.
Yeah, right. Okay. And that's what's empowering you. So I just got the notice that there are three new they call dossiers. Okay. So new settings and that are expanding the game. that just came out. So currently they're only available as PDFs, but I imagine eventually, just like the rest of their books, they'll do a print on demand version. Oh, yeah, so these are the print on demand versions. There was a Kickstarter for the original Never Going Home. So I'm not sure if they handled that differently, if they used DriveThru RPG to fulfill it, or if there were other books. The kind of quality of the print on demand is okay. Yeah, I'm not happy with the margins. the trim of the books is like, whoa. You've got sentences like really close. Yeah. So it ruined some of their layout, I think, of their original books.
Hmm. I was going to say, I think a tangent here is if this was print on demand through DriveThru RPG, I forget exactly when, but fairly soon, if not already, DriveThru RPG print on demand, I'm pretty sure they're getting rid of their saddle stitched option.
Oh, really?
I think maybe the only thing you'd be able to do is perfect bound.
Right. Oh, that's too bad. Wow.
They didn't say why. I imagine it's just kind of like printing cost or whatever. But yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah. Yeah. Because that was nice, especially when they did the old box sets, like old 90s box sets, and they put everything in a hardbound, square, a hardbound book, saddle stitched book. That was a nice, little archive of that to have as a physical copy. And now it's only going to be floppy paperbacks. That's too bad. But, So three new dossiers. So just run through really quick. So the first one was Bones in the Dust, and this is 1915. So this is pre-Veil, before the discovery of the Broken Veil. So this is the scene, kind of the very beginning of corruption. So British and Anzac forces are in Gallipoli at the time. So that's where they discover the kind of ancient powers stirring. Blood on the Snow is set in 1916, and that's the Russian army setting, and that includes so the first one includes seven fetishes, which are the more like basically spells and powers, the peoples of the mountain, one new whisper path, which is the other. So whispers are kind of like you're constantly hearing something talking to you, and whether you listen or not decides like how if you can control or if you can utilize any of that corrupted power. So six connected adventures in Bones in the Dust, Blood on the Snow, similarly, as they add a morale pool mechanic, two new whisper paths, Breath of the Father Winter, and four monsters and six connected adventures. Cool. And then the third one, Tears in the Sea. So 1917, and this is taking place as a crew of a U-boat, a cursed U-boat. So.
Well, okay, it was not going to be a cursed U-boat, right?
Right. Like, under the water, everything is fine.
Yeah, exactly. Who wants like a supernatural World War One? And you're just on a regular ship.
Right.
Everything's
right.
fine. Yeah. Nope. The bulkheads are not bleeding. What are you talking about?
What could possibly go wrong? Yes. So seven magic tattoos, one whisper path, naval combat mechanics, stealth incidents, and six connected adventures.
Oh, cool.
So a lot more. So if you've played this game, if you've gone through everything that they've offered in the original kind of run, there's a lot more now to play. Cool. And it's got a lot of nice mechanics. So there's a deck of card mechanic that works in a way I've never seen kind of before, to handle a lot of the
task resolution blanking. Kind of stuff?
No, it's I'm totally blanking on what they call it, but it has kind of positive and negative outcomes of things, and depending on suits of the cards.
So it's like success and, or like yes and yes but,
right?
Well, no but,
yeah, and you no and, you, yeah. The and spending the cards is like giving up your life. Like so if you lose the cards, you're losing your mind, basically. So the death of your character. So your characters could die, but the most common death is just kind of like just walking away.
Oh, so it is very Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, right. Like,
oh, your sanity hit zero.
Yeah, you just
see you later.
Yeah, you've just like you don't understand where you are or what's going on anymore, and you just just walk away from the group. Right. Yeah. So it had that's very haunting and kind of has a nice
So it's a happy game. Is what I'm hearing.
It's really happy. Yes, yes. As you can tell from the illustrations. Yeah. So I'd love to get a chance to to play a session with of this. And unfortunately, it's not, it probably can be done, but it's not very online play friendly.
Oh, because of all the kind of physical things you have to do.
There's different, yeah. So I'd have to like show cards to people on a campus, like, everyone close your eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Here's except this card. Person. Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. So those sorts of things are a little bit harder to manage. I'm sure you can. You can set this up, right. And somebody may have already done that. But yeah, so it's definitely worth checking out. So you definitely would need to start with the core book. So take a look at that. And it's very often on sale. It's been offered as the deal of the day several times on DriveThruRPG. So take a look at Never Going Home from Wet Ink Games.
Looks pretty cool.
All right.
Cool.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. I suppose on itch.io too.
All right.
It's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where I'm still talking about my sledgehammer hack of Brighthammer.
Oh, nice.
Which is now ballooned out to 3 little pocket mod pamphlets.
Oh, nice.
Player handbook, GM guide, and a little bestiary.
Oh, excellent. Oh, very cool.
How about you?
Nice. Oh, so I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon that I streamed the drawing of that. So look for that on abusecartoons.com and then both on Twitch and YouTube under Abuse Cartoons. And still releasing as a podcast, some tiny audiobooks, like 15-minute audiobook stories for Enmity Stories. So go to stories.enmitycorp.com. So that's N-M-I-T-Y-C-O-R-P.com. And yeah, that's it for this week.
Cool.
All right. So if you'd like to support this podcast and become a weakling, consider pledging on Patreon at patreon.com/idleredhands. And also, yeah, you can find us on YouTube and both YouTube and as a podcast. So idleredhands.com for the subscription. And that's it for this week. So we'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.